You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kivalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Is John Cromwell's Little Lord Fauntleroy. And these are films. Little Lord Fauntleroy is definitely the more famous of those films. It wasn't the first version of it, Yitzchok, because the author who wrote the famous children's book, Frances Hodgson Burnett, who also wrote The Little Princess, many other wonderful children's books. This was a big favorite in people's minds, Little Lord Fauntleroy. And it's really, of course, The Secret Garden. This is a book that you can see why kids loved it. The story of a child. And again, I didn't read the book, so I'm not sure if in the book it's you have this America, England type of dichotomy. But at least in the movie, and I assume in the book as well, there's at least a kid who's being raised in poverty. He knows that his father was some sort of an important English person, but they were never raised with a tremendous amount of wealth. And all of a sudden he discovers in the movie, he's actually in Brooklyn, or Hollywood's version of Brooklyn. And he discovers through a lawyer that appears that he's actually the only heir to the Earl of Dannecourt in England. And this makes him Little Lord Fauntleroy. And that, of course, was the book. And the book not only has this sort of like Prince and the Pauper type of thing of a child discovering what it means to be ushered into wealth, but there's also a little bit of drama, which the movie has as well, as there seems to be some contention as to indeed whether he is Little Lord Fauntleroy. I mean, that, again, I haven't read the book, but I'm sure that the movie, what I'm talking about, retains those elements that were in the book. Now, this movie was directed by John Cromwell, but who was a director of, it seems to be, some significance, although I don't think he ever was considered one of the major Hollywood directors. I think most people know him because his son, James Cromwell, has become quite an important character actor. I think anybody who sees probably saw Babe. He had an indelible performance there. But his dad was a director that did many, many films in Hollywood. But it's not the directing. It's not his cinematic powers here as a setting up camera shots that makes this film anything. It really, I think, was the producer, and it was produced by David O. Selznick. I don't know if the O really meant anything, but David O. Selznick was a producer who was raised sort of like as a movie brat, coming out of Pittsburgh, going to California, and deciding what he was going to do was rent space at the various studios and create his own production company. And most people probably realized that David O. Selznick was the producer of Gone with the Wind. And I always thought that the reason why the image of the Selznick production company was this sort of mansion, a southern mansion, had to do with Gone with the Wind. But actually, I'm mistaken. Selznick was a producer of films even before Gone with the Wind. And he was in business, so to speak, I think for about 10 or 12 years or so, trying to make what he felt was quality pictures. In other words, Selznick would not make films that were just throwaway shorts, vile gangster films or other sorts of sordid material. He wanted to be sort of an upper crust, sort of like a Merchant Ivory type of person, or similar to what we talked about with your wife a couple of weeks ago, Powell Pressburger. He really wanted his films to have a certain stamp of quality. And one of the films that he was a producer on was David Copperfield, during a trip to London, he was able to discover this incredible child, Freddie Bartholomew, who, if I don't know if you've seen Yitzchok, any of the films that he was in, and I was very shocked when I did a search in preparation for this podcast, when I saw that he is not listed in most of the top 10 child actors of all time, Shirley Temple does make it in most of them. But I can tell you, Freddie Bartholomew is incredible. He is his diction, his elocution, his facial movements. We all know Yitzchok, that child actors can be some of the most saccharine, silly, obvious type of actors, and that's because, of course, they aren't necessarily they don't have the life experience to be able to capture the words that are on the page that they're supposed to say, especially if there's some melodrama involved. And even if they've been through it, it takes years to be able to craft, to take to actually hone the actor's craft in a way that you sound convincing, whether it's a question of accent or a question of how to actually pronounce things and accent things, to be able to look into the camera, to be able to actually give over the illusion that you're listening and responding, as opposed to just using your lines that are memorized in your mind. These are talents that usually do not come easy for children, and yet we know that Hollywood has, whether it's the aforementioned Shirley Temple or any of the other child actors that are famous. That Freddie was a superstar. Not only did he make, not only was he the star of David Copperfield at the age of 8 and a half, I think, when it was filmed, but Little Lord Fauntleroy, and I'm going to explain why he is really the one who carries this film almost totally and completely. But also, Captain's Courageous, which is a film that, if it wouldn't be for Freddie Bartholomew, there's no question about this, Spencer Tracy would not have won the Oscar. And Captain's Courageous in particular, he is able to transform himself from the bratty child that just wants everything for himself. I think Melvin Douglas plays his dad in that. And of course, he's the bratty child that gets thrown overboard and is taken up by a very different, very similar story to the Seawolf that we talked about a number of weeks ago. But of course, this was Rudyard Kipling's story about how a child can really change and turn himself into the father of the man that's going to be a productive adult. And Bartholomew is incredible in that film. And I had never seen Fauntleroy, despite the fact that it's in the public domain, because I really thought, because of the source material, it was probably extremely juvenile. And it probably, and despite the fact that I knew Selznick was very proud of it, and it was the biggest money maker for the Selznick production company till Gone with the Wind, I dismissed it. And I was wrong. This was a film that I saw recently, and it inspired me because the story is inspiring. And not just because he's poor and then he becomes the Lord. It's because once he is told that he is, well, even before he's told that he is the heir to this incredible fortune, you see that the child is able to change people's lives. He's able to bring out the best of the people around him. Now, in Brooklyn, where he lives, his two best friends are the greengrocer and what he calls the bootstrap, which of course is another way is another way of saying a shoeshine boy. Who's the shoeshine boy? Mickey Rooney, who was together with him in Captain's Courageous, and Guy Kibbe, and of course Yitzchok. Guy Kibbe brings a smile, I think, to anybody whoever hears his name. He was one of the great comic character actors in Hollywood. These were his two buddies in Brooklyn. And obviously Mickey Rooney was older than him, than Freddie. Freddie was at this point, suppose, I think he was 11 when he made the film, but he was playing 9. He was a short, little short boy. And he shows in this film, set in the 1880s in Brooklyn in the beginning, how he is able to navigate a very tough neighborhood, a neighborhood of toughs who really want to beat him up. And he's able to bring light and understanding. He's able with his innocence, but also with his innate intelligence that never wants to lord it, and no pun intended here, over anyone. He actually believes in the best in people. And when he lives with his mother, played by Dolores Costello Barrymore. She was John Barrymore's wife. John Barrymore, of course, is the ultimate tragic Hollywood actor, the one who, in silent films, of course, was considered one of the great leading men. And because of, I think it was the nasal quality of his voice or other issues, he was not able to really make the transition to sound films in any significant way. And he turned to drinking, and he was violent. And he was married to this very beautiful woman, Dolores Costello, who appears here as Dolores Barrymore. I mean, why not? If you've got the name of the first family of actors, you might as well keep it. So she plays his mom. She's a widow. She was married to this English fellow who was clearly a lord in himself, but just like many Meghan Markle and was it Prince Harry, I think, realize that there's always going to be, this that the English royalty is somehow going to have a taste for this American style. And then he was disowned, as it were, from his father. And therefore, she was exiled with him to America. He died, leaving her to raise the child by herself. And but he's been raised magnificently. For some reason, despite the fact they don't seem to have any income, I'm not sure where the money came from. They have a maid who takes care of both of them and dotes over the child. And when all of a sudden there arrives a wonderful, wonderful actor playing the lawyer, it's Henry Stevenson who plays Havisham. And again, he's a really wonderful English actor who is able to. Sort of as an Edmund Gwenn type of quality in terms of showing that like a constant bemusement, very seriousness, but a constant bemusement over what is occurring. He's the lawyer being sent from England, and he is so impressed because it's clear that his employer, the Earl himself, the Earl of Dorincourt, played by the former superstar cricket player of England, C. Aubrey Smith, mustached completely and turned into like when we talked about Colonel Blimp, the ultimate type of Colonel Blimp type of character, but much, much worse, as we'll see. He's been sent by this man, and this man has told him the worst type of things about this daughter-in-law of his. And he discovers how refined she is, how sweet she is. And of course, here's the deal. We're taking you to England. I'm not going to separate you, the Earl says, from your son. Not completely, but you're not going to live with us in the castle. The castle, I'm going to live with my grandson. You'll have a house nearby, but I never want to see you. I never want to see your face. And she doesn't allow her son, played by Cedric, Ceddie, as he's called, played by Freddie Bartholomew, to know anything about this. But that rather, the grandfather, who has sent his lawyer with a stash of cash to pay off any debts they have there and to bring them to England. Now, it's interesting, of course, right away, you see not only Bartholomew's acting talent, but you see the story's really sense of goodness. Because what does he want to do with this money that he now has? He wants to help Mickey Rooney's character. He wants to help Dick, the shoeshine boy. He wants to give him his, instead of having to run around and have to shine shoes on every corner, but to give him his own little shop. And they're able to buy that for him, that it could be his own little spot that he has. He's also able to help the old Irish lady who's selling apples. What he wants to do is help other people. That even though he's been given wealth, he realizes emotionally, that the greatest gift a person can have is the ability to give to others. And this is what was inculcated into him as a child, seemingly from his mother. And this is what he practices to the T, even before he gets on the boat. And of course, once he arrives in England, and of course, England is obviously just made up as some Hollywood soundstage. But the English actors that they use, unlike National Velvet and other films that we talked about, where the accents were just flying all over the place, they used a complete set of English actors. I mentioned C. Aubrey Smith before. He plays the, if anyone is, he's sort of like Alistair Sim in Scrooge combined with Cruella de Vil from 101 Dalmatians. I mean, he is just, he's the Grinch. He's just this mean, ornery, dismissive landlord. He's the lord of this whole little area in England, and all he wants to do is foreclose on people and send them away. He feels he can push the rector around, the minister. He is seen to be a person who is bitter, a person who suffers from gout, whose dog is this huge Great Dane who just growls and is vicious. I mean, they really lay it on thick on Grandfather. And yet, of course, when they bring Seti over, when they bring Freddie Bartholomew over, that first conversation, and it's all Bar it's Bartholomew sells it. He's able to show with his innocence and his understanding or lack of a way into the heart of this man. And within, of course, what's going to happen, Yitzchak. He's going to change this person. But it's done so wonderfully where you see him, soon playing marbles on the floor. You see that that he says, "Of course you're the sweetest person I know. You must be a good person. You gave us this money. If you give this money to people, if you bought this, you brought this house for my mother, if you gave us money to be able to help people, you must have a good heart. You must be somebody that the actions that you do must indicate the fact, not that you're just trying to buy people off and just have to do a charity because it's expected of you, but because it really comes from a charitable heart and a good place." And what the film really brings out in a way that is so moving is that this fellow, the Duke, the Earl, has had two sons. Both of them have run off with Americans, seemingly. He says in the film how, and he tells the lawyer that he never really was close to his children. He never really loved his children. He was incapable of loving his children. And yet, when this child arrives and continuously says that he cares for him, that he can be fond of him, that he hopes they're going to be good friends, and finds the best of him and judges him favorably, he's able to discover that he has the capacity of love, that he doesn't hate himself as much as he thinks, that he isn't this ogre, that he is someone that could, because of the love that's being given to him, he can start caring for himself and for others. Even the Great Dane quickly becomes the under the spell of Little Lord Fauntleroy. The servants, the townspeople, and there are such wonderful little scenes like the going to the rector and going to church. And even though I'm not a big fan of hymn singing, and that sort of again as being raised as a Jew and never really a spend time in a church in any way or holding a hymnal or anything like that. I sort of like, it's I sort of like want to turn away from these scenes. But to me, it was so similar to what we have in our own culture about the Mizrahmant. There's a special place where the Lord sits. And you can see that although his mother is sort of in the pews as well, you can see the bond and the love that is exuded by Bartholomew in his singing, a very, very nice singing voice as well, that sort of indicates that this is indeed a cherub who has really descended down to this world. And there is a party where he's introduced to all his relatives. And again, he isn't overknowing. Again, people sometimes cite Macaulay Culkin's portrayal in Home Alone and others, or I forgot the boy who was in The Christmas Story, as a realistic of a child, a realistic example of a child star of meeting adults. Peter Billingsley, I think, is the boy who plays it in The Christmas Story. Freddie Bartholomew does a great job of being having wonderful diction, of having a certain upper crust vocabulary, but at the same time, not being just some sort of moppet that is able to talk incredibly. He's a child, and you can tell that he plays it like a child, how he falls asleep. It really is a wonderful performance. And it's a testament to the fact that you can have sentimental pablum, but done correctly, it could really bring out a positivity of and much more than what Dickens did in A Christmas Carol. Because what Dickens did in A Christmas Carol was you can be scared to do tshuva. Basically, you could if God will send you angels or to tell you or spirits that will tell you about how your life is corrosive and what it's leading to, you might want to put the brakes on it and stop. And I'm not saying Christmas Carol obviously is a very powerful metaphor of how one can change their lives, but I find Fauntleroy to actually be a more mature way, and that is to really discover innocence within children and others around us, and to not be afraid to shatter what people conceptions that we think they are. Many times we fall into traps of continuing to act in the way our enemies want us to act. And here you can see how the film differs from that. He's able to discover that the mother is really responsible for so much of the love that Seti is able to shine outwards. And he realizes that he has been wrong. And in the scene where eventually he comes to her house, which was a house given to her by him, although she refuses to take actual stipend and any money because she says she doesn't want to take money from someone who hates her. He comes to her because he realizes he's wrong, and also because another person has arisen. And this is the drama of the film. And like many, many films, Yitzchak, that are based on books that need to somehow have that third act, that somehow need to have everything's moving along. And now here comes the how will it end, the suspense part. Okay, so I'll tell you what the suspense part is. I mentioned there were two sons. The older son's wife appears with an even older boy that she says was fathered by the older son. And therefore, this boy is really Lord Fauntleroy. And of course, this woman is the opposite of Dolores Costello. She's really I think it was played by Helen Flint. She's someone who's clearly a gold digger. Her manners are only are gossamer thin. She really doesn't care. She's really got a sort of a brash American type of accent. And however, she has a marriage certificate and a birth certificate, which indicates that this child was actually born while she was technically still married to the original, to the older brother. And at this point, it becomes almost apparent, even to the lawyers, based on what the evidence seems to seem, that Freddie Bartholomew Seti is really not little Lord Fauntleroy, but it's actually this sullen child who sort of like just is sucking on some sort of chocolate candy, who doesn't really talk well, who doesn't have the same sort of angelic appearance. And it's clear, at that point that the Earl needs to somehow forge a relationship with Seti's mother. And what saves the day? So, spoiler alert, what saves the day is, of course, and I was watching the film, I said, what, they put Guy Kibbe in there for the first 20 minutes, and they have Mickey Rooney and Guy Kibbe there, and they keep on like every 15, 20 minutes. A letter comes from England back to Brooklyn, and they're reading it and talking about things. And Guy Kibbe's character, Mr. Hobbs, is saying, "Well, maybe they're not so bad, those English. Maybe they're, with all their stuffed up royalty." And of course, this really has to do with the divide between England and America. We talked about it in many programs already about how Hollywood was interested in actually, dissolving that type of rift. I don't know if it's because they knew the war, the hooves of war were approaching in Germany. I don't think that was going on. I think in general that was one of the things that Hollywood set itself out to do, was to somehow merge once again the English and American mentality. We've talked about that on previous programs, and part of that is really shown by Hobbes, the Guy Kibbe character, thinking that Englishmen are all stuffed up and they're into this a sense of royalty, which really, just abuses the common person. And C. Aubrey Smith, believes all Americans are the most vulgar people in the world, and they're unlettered. But it turns out that Mickey Rooney recognizes it when he sees the newspapers trumpeting this new heiress, and he recognizes it as his own sister-in-law. They dropped the story about that he had a brother that was going to find his wife that he thought was in Chicago. And it turns out, of course, that she is just a two-bit floozy, somebody that, and it's only when, surprise, they end up making their way all the way to England. Clearly, they send a telegram or somehow they make their way to England, and they're able to expose her. And Freddie is able to celebrate his 10th birthday as and his best friends are here from America. And he can clearly show himself as the real Lord Fauntleroy. And there's a lot of cute little, funny conversations as Kibbe realizes that Englishmen do have something great about them, and there is something that the aristocracy isn't just, isn't just some boilerplate stuff, that it really does represent a certain magnanimous spirit. And the film really is, as I said, a celebration of how children and the humane treatment of children and an understanding of how their innocence can sometimes be the key to unlocking the best parts of ourselves. I think that's really why the film was so popular, why it made so much money. What I'm surprised it took is that I guess nobody cared about it enough to keep it out of the public domain, because it is available. You can actually, it's on the internet, what is that site called again? The Internet Archive site, where you can find it. You can find it on YouTube, many, many other places. It was restored, and I don't remember the outfit that restored it. There still has some scratches in it, but I saw the restored version on TCM, and I really recommend it highly. I regret not seeing it when I was younger, because I think it really is a film that, again, we talk about Miracle of 34th Street. We talked about other films about what children can do. I think here, really, it's the message is great, and the messenger is incredible. And it's really a tragedy in a way that Freddie Bartholomew's career was cut short the way it was. There was a lot. Again, I don't know all the details, but I do know there was a tremendous amount of rancor over who controlled the monies that he had in terms of his guardians and his parents. And he really retired from filmmaking, and never really got a chance to show himself as an adult actor that in any great way. I think he was known as a television director as television came to be so important in the 1950s and 60s. But to me, the five or six, people talk, it's like about James Dean as being this incredible method actor icon, and he only made three films. He only made East of Eden, Rebel Without a Cause, and Giant. And I love all those films. Those films are great. But he only did three, and people will still talk about the next James Dean. And it's interesting that Freddie Bartholomew, you look at the films that he made, the flawlessness of his technique, and considering what was going on there, he really needs to be extolled, I believe, as one of the marvels of Hollywood in terms of what he was able to bring throughout. We all know movies are phony. We all know movies are just scripted. But when you have an actor that's able to make you forget all that, when you have a child that can make you say, "Wow, that's a kid, but I love that kid. That kid is great. That kid is the kid that in a way, That's the type of child I'd like to have. That's the child I wish I was. And I think you've accomplished quite a bit. And that's why, I encourage people to check it out.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, Shalom.